Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Dr. Duvall.
How are you doing? I like doctor.
Angelo Gingerelli just got a doctor in comedy degree. Did you see that?
No, I had no idea it was even possible.
I think it was the University of the Big Lebowski, so I'm a little skeptical of it. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man.
So you're from Florida.
I was originally from here. I grew up here, yeah. Wanamassa, not too far from here.
Oh, wow.
And, originally Farmingdale, then Wanamassa, then at the age of 15, we moved to Florida. I've been there.
Farmingdale, Long Island.
No, Farmingdale, New Jersey. It's probably about 30 minutes from here.
North?
In the middle.
Okay, so probably, you're from Central Jersey.
Yeah, from Central Jersey.
You're a Jersey guy.
Yep, originally.
Then, a lot of people from Jersey, their eyeballs are only on Florida. They're like, what's going on with Florida? You know, there's a very Jersey to Florida pipeline. Why is that? Why do Jersey people ignore the rest?
I have no idea, but there are a lot of people from New Jersey in Florida. I've met a lot of people down there that are from New Jersey. No idea why.
Right? Am I lying?
No, you're absolutely right.
Why do they not go to Nashville, Tennessee? You go to Nashville, Tennessee, how many Jersey people?
I don't know, I've never been there.
Exactly.
I have no idea.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
In my defense, it wasn't my choice. My parents moved there, took me with them, and then, you know, that's how I ended up there.
Right. So then you started comedy in Florida.
Yes, yeah, started comedy in Orlando.
Yeah. And how was that? What year was that? How old were you?
What was in your head? May 17, 2018. So a little over 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I actually took a comedy class with my comedy friend of mine. He taught it. And I thought it was the best thing for me to do, really. I learned a lot from it. You know, joke structure, timing, stuff like that. Stuff I probably wouldn't have gotten if I just went to the stage myself and done it. I hear a lot of comics say you don't need classes, just go to the stage and do it. I found that the comedy class worked great for me because it taught me, again, structure, discipline, timing, and then, you know, the nuances of, you know, things you do when you get up on the stage, like move the microphone behind you or microphone stand behind you, stuff like that.
Yeah, and that was a big thing for me. You know, I took a class in New York City at Gotham Comedy Club with Dan Vitale before I did improv training. And you're right. It's like, I don't know anything. I don't know anything. You know, how does a microphone work? How does it, you know?
Right. Right.
People that, you know, what is trying to do something look like in this? You know, there's a lot of Olympic divers out there. And their Russian teachers have like a wooden rod. And they hit their abdomen and they go, no, stand like this. You know,
oh, still, really?
You know, they be, you know, imagine being an Olympic athlete, you know?
That's crazy.
And then with comedy, it's like open mic.
Yeah.
There's no training, there's no, you know, preference.
I was going to ask you what your thought was on classes, because it seems to be a mix. Some comics mm-hmm. are like, yeah, you could do a class, it'd be good for you. And some comics are like, you're wasting your money. To me, my thought is, you know, everything else that you go to do in life, you get training on. I mean, you wouldn't want to go into a doctor's office that's doing surgery and have the doctor say, yeah, I'm figuring it out myself. I never took any training. Why can't a comic go?
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to cut you open. Let's figure it out.
We'll figure it out as we go along.
No. When I cut the thing and then I don't have to know where the veins or arteries right. are. I'm just going to start chopping. Exactly. And the success rate for doctors is higher than comedians.
Yeah.
To your point, I would say, like, a lot of people shit on comedy, stand-up comedy classes. They go, oh, you're a hack if you did a stand-up comedy class.
Yep.
I'm Al Natural. You know, and my feeling about the whole situation is, like, how many people get four-year degrees in anthropology and then work at a bank?
Yep.
Doesn't that education somehow inform their life? Did you go to college?
I went to a tech trade school.
For what?
IT.
Uh-huh.
Computer repair, networking, stuff like that. I was actually doing that before I moved here to New Jersey, back from Florida. I lost my job beginning of COVID. Things slowed down. They let me go. And I had a hard time finding a job. So right now I'm working for some relatives in a pool company. And they gave me a place to stay until I get myself back on my feet and find something that you know, I want to do again. Like, I want to get back into the IT field eventually.
Yeah, so you're installing pools?
No, not me.
Maintaining pools?
I just do the paperwork in the office. A lot of data entry stuff involves billing and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to say, you texted me out of the blue. We don't know each other. This is really our first conversation. The reason I had you on my podcast is you have a brilliant joke. One brilliant joke.
Okay.
I can't say that for everybody that comes to the Brighton Bar. You, like, beginning to end, it's unbelievable. And I don't want to put you on the spot.
Okay.
But you have a joke about Monopoly and your girlfriend and rent. Can you tell this joke, please?
Yeah, so you want to actually just do the joke first?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
So,
Can I give you some space? I feel like this would help
that
you.
That feels great. Oh, thank you very much.
She was a 10. No, she wasn't. She was a 2, but she had 5 different personalities. Me and one of those personalities hit it off pretty well. I was like, man, I'm going to get lucky tonight. I started to panic, though. I hadn't had sex in a while. Yeah. Appreciate you cheering for my no sex in a while. Then I remember the old phrase, sex is like riding a bicycle. And she freaked out when I came in with the helmet on. I like board games. I use board games to explain the everyday things that are going on in my life. For example, I was dating this girl. She decided that she wanted to play a game of Operation and go get some breast implants done. I was like, hell yeah. We play Twister every day of a month. At the end of the month, she came to me and said, we're about to play the game of life. I'm pregnant. The joke was on her. That became a game of Clue because I'm sterile. We're going to find out who did it. I like to play Monopoly. I use Monopoly to test the bonds of my relationship with the women I'm with. For example, I was playing with my girlfriend at the time. She came around the board. She hit Park Place. I had a hotel there. She says, oh my God, I don't have the money for that. I'm like, too bad. You know the rules of Monopoly. Play up or get out. She put her head down. She got real sad. And I don't know what happened next, but she got a smile on her face and a gleam in her eyes. She looked up at me and said, what if I gave you a blowjob? The first thing I thought was, you realize that's a hotel there, right? You can get away with that shit over there in Baltic Avenue. Not over here in Park Place. But I take my board game seriously. What I actually said to her was, you will pay up cold hard cash. I don't accept your sexual forms of payment for your rent. Pay up or get out. And that's how I ended up single. My landlord recently came by my house. He says, hey man, you're late on your rent. I'm like, well, I don't have the money for it. My girlfriend just left me. He said, too bad, you know the rules, pay up or get out. And that's when I realized I was in my own real life Monopoly situation. My landlord was testing our bonds. I was in my girlfriend's shoes and I thought to myself, what would she do in a situation like this? What if I gave you a blowjob? As it turns out, I live on Baltic Avenue after all. That's all my time. Thank you very much. I'm Aaron Duvall.
So my landlord came by, knocked on my door, said, hey man, you're late on your rent. I was like, well, I don't have the money for that. He said, you know the rules. Pay up or get out. And then that's where it struck me that my landlord was testing the bonds of our relationship. I was in my girlfriend's shoes. And I thought to myself, what would she do in a situation like that? So I said to my landlord, what if I gave you a blowjob? And as it turns out, I live on Baltic Avenue after all.
Okay, there's so many layers to this. Can I just talk about...
Yeah,
I mean, Aaron, unbelievable, right? Baltimore, so you're like, the high-priced real estate versus the low-priced real estate.
Yep.
The game of Monopoly is the game, you know? The nature of women seducing you, you know?
Yep.
There's a lot. There's a lot of psychology. Is this a true scenario? Did you have, did you lose your girlfriend over Monopoly?
No, it wasn't a true scenario.
Okay.
the joke, so, I used to do, the improv open mic in Orlando, Orlando Improv. My mentor, Carmen Vallone, who also did my classes, he would have a writing session before the open mic. And at these writing sessions, he'd give everybody a random topic to write on, and he just looked at me and said, board games, go with it. And I tried like so many different things. I came up with Monopoly. Originally that was just a setup punchline, set premise and punchline, that was it. And then it just wasn't good enough for me. I kept working at it, and it got to where it is now after about 6 months of working at it. And I still don't think it's perfect. I think there's a couple more things I could do with it, but
like what do you think is not perfect about that joke?
So, to me, it's a two-part joke. The first part is going up to the part of saying, that's how I lost my girlfriend. To me, that seems like it's, I think of it as a punchline. It could be something better with it. And then the other thing I really like to do is, because it's really a callback. The second half is a callback to the first half. I really like to be able to take that first half, put it somewhere else in my set, and then later on, come up to the part where my landlord's knocking on my door. That way, it doesn't seem too obvious segueing from one to the other. But other than that, I mean, I like the joke.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of experience with women? Have you had the relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I was married for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
I dated for a couple years after that. After I got divorced, I was in a relationship after I got out of my marriage for another 2.5 years.
Did you start that relationship that turned into a marriage when you were in IT training?
The first one, no. The first one, I was actually working in a staffing industry, putting day laborers to work. It's ironic that I got my IT job 2 weeks before my wife asked me for a divorce. And if I had not been asked to start that new job, I probably would have moved back here earlier. But the fact that I got something I went to school for, something I've been wanting to do, it kept me in Florida for another 7 years.
So what about you getting, what was you getting the new job and being asked to divorce connected?
No, not at all.
What went wrong in the relationship?
In the relationship, we didn't communicate well. Things were going down and, you know, we didn't know how to communicate, and if we had communicated, we probably would have worked things out better, but it got to a point where we realized we were so far apart and where we were in the relationship that it was too impossible to come back. And we both
so when she finally communicated with you,
yep.
What was her issue?
That's the big thing, was communication was her issue. She just didn't feel like we were on the same part. She felt like we were no longer in love, which in hindsight, I believe that now, because at the time I didn't want to believe it. We were no longer in love. We were more like roommates, and we lived our lives more like roommates than anything. We didn't really do a whole lot together.
You didn't take her out and have a little, let's get brunch at the Chateau Marmont.
Not a whole lot. As the years went by, it slowly, you know, dwindled. And, I mean, you know, I made some mistakes and I don't dwell on it. I moved on. I did what I had to do. It was weird. It was definitely weird. Cause it was like 3 days before 9/11 that she asked for me for a divorce. That's how I remember when it was.
Wow. So 91, you guys got together. You guys got married in 1991?
Oh, no. We got married in 2004. 2004, we got divorced.
2014?
Yes, 2014.
Oh, okay. So you got together in 2001.
Yes.
Married 2004, divorced 2014.
Yes.
Wow. But you, did you say you had two marriages?
Just one.
Just one.
One marriage.
But there was a girlfriend before her?
After.
After.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I had one. I had one relationship before my ex-wife, and that wasn't really a solid relationship. It was one of those girls that she was friendly. I found out she was friendly with everybody. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So that was a mistake. And then she, fortunately, passed away of cancer at the age of 31. And yeah. And then I met my wife at the height of online dating websites. That's how I met her. And, you know, we hit off pretty well at first. And, you know, we dated for like 3-4 years, and then we got married.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I got divorced, I was divorced out of a relationship probably about 7-8 months. And then I met another young girl, and she was 11 years younger than me. We stayed together for 2.5 years. We had a lot of good times, but, you know, like that, we had our issues as well. And then
Did comedy in any way impede these relationships? Did you fall in love with stand up in a way that took your time?
I wasn't gonna do. You won't get out. I wasn't gonna do.
Keep it up for Aaron Duvall doing acts of homosexuality to pay the rent. You know, we're not above that during this COVID era. I don't know. I think the economy is about to crash. I think everyone is about to die. I think everything is over right now. And I'll tell you why. I have evidence, and I'd like to submit for you. I went to a Target the other day, and I was walking through the Target trying to get the items I had on my list, my grocery list, my shopping list, you know. And I was looking up at all the posters of all the models, and they were all fat as shit, you know. I'm in the ladies section, they're all fat models. I'm in the men's section, they're all fat models, you know. I go to the only normal bodied being I encountered was I was in the bacon aisle. I was trying to pick up some bacon. And, like, they were, like, exceptionally skinny pigs. That was the only, like, thin model in the entire Target. And then I go to, like, pay, you know? And all the cashiers are, like, beautiful. They're, like, beautiful cashiers. And that's when I realized that the economy is over. When the cashiers are hotter than the fat pork models on the posters. I was like, I think this is a bubble that's about to burst. We're about to have a 20-year recession right now. Because the poster models are fatter and uglier than the cashiers. That's when you click short sell on your Robinhood account. I realized that there's a cycle of sexual abuse recently. There's like a cycle, like if you were sexually abused, you're going to abuse recently. And that all started when last week, exactly a week ago today, I walked into this place and, you know, we're drinking, we're telling jokes, we're telling stories, we're having a good time. Brian St. John slaps my balls like this. Like he has his hand out like this and he slaps my balls. Okay? I slap him back. Hey, how you doing, Sandler? You know? Then I went in the back where Liam is sitting right now. And there was Mark Henley, right? And I go, I'm slappy, right? And he goes, what the fuck are you doing right now? Right? He got really mad about it. Like, almost like aggressive, like he was going to fist fight me. And I was like, wow, this is the cycle of sexual abuse. When it's done to you, you perpetrate it on someone else, like it's all friendly. And then you're like, what? Like, oh, that's sex abuse. I called Brian St. John one time for advice. That was the wrong move. I go, Brian St. John, I had a feeling today. You know, I had a feeling. Can I talk to you about my feelings? And this is a quote, okay? He's not here. If he was here, I would tell the same story, okay? He goes, sounds like a bunch of faggots talking about some bullshit. Why don't you all shoot yourselves, you dumb queers? And then I realized I only trust New Jersey comics for my therapy. I'm saving up for National Chatterbait Day. I'm not saving money. I'm saving my juice. So when National Chatterbait Day happens, I got some big loads for those freaks on the internet. If, you know, Michelle Harris and Obama, I don't know, Harris and Obama, or Biden and I don't know who's, there was like an election, I think. And some people on the internet are saying that Michelle Obama is actually Michael Yvonne, she's a man, you know? And I'm on the record saying this now. I'm recording this for my podcast. I'll suck it. If Michelle Obama, if I go down on her and she's got a big dick, I will suck it to completion like an American. Fighting for oil rights in Alaska! Smoke pot worship aliens. I've been Eric Allback.
I didn't actually start doing the comedy until after I got out of those relationships.
So this is how my mind worked. Like, I was like, I want love, I want love, I want love. So I was finally getting girls, you know, and I'm still going for that, but COVID sort of put a damper on my dating relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I find the same sort of feelings. Like, when you kill on stage, it's like literally the same sort of feelings.
Yeah.
How did that evolve? What was the impetus for you to start doing comedy?
So I had, for years, always been told I was funny. I should, you know, do comedy. Actually, probably about 4 or 5 years, even before I jumped into it, I started, writing stuff down in the Evernote app. And, when I got out of my second relationship, I moved in with some friends and I'm like, I need to do something different. I need to start something off that I haven't done that's going to like change my life the way I think. And I was like, I've always wanted to do this comedy thing. What can I do to get into that? Prior to, you know, leaving that relationship, I already started going to open mics just to watch people. I don't know if you're familiar, Preacher Lawson.
Okay.
He's been on America's Got Talent.
Right.
I used to hang out with him a little bit in Orlando before, you know, he moved out to LA. And actually seeing him and watching him perform the very first time, it was the first open mic I went to, the first comedian that went up, and I was like, I can do that. And then that's where it hit me, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to figure this out.
Well, it also looks like he's having fun.
Oh, yeah, he's absolutely having fun.
It's like he's having fun. He's fucking killing. It's like, wait a minute, he just wrote a couple jokes together and...
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. So, I was at an open mic. I heard a friend of mine... she wasn't a friend at the time, but I became friends with her. I heard her talking to another comic about comedy class, and I was like... Tell me about this comedy class. I need to find out who this is and how I can get into it. She told me who it was. I contacted the guy, and then it was just, I didn't look back from that point forward. Here I am.
Yeah, and you've just been, like, obsessed ever since.
Yeah.
Because I've seen you. There's, like, a certain sparkle in your eye where I'm like, oh, this guy, like, from the first time I saw you, which was, what was it, 1 year ago? Was it? No.
Here?
Probably about
2-3 months ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I haven't been here that long.
Dude, I've been doing mushrooms, you know? I don't want to tell you who gave me them. I'm not going to tell you who gave me them. I've literally been doing mushrooms, like, microdosing every day, and time is very elusive to me. But I remember when I saw you and you did that Monopoly joke, I was fucking dying. Because also, the person before you was so terrible and was making excuses and was blaming the audience. And I was like, ugh, you're blaming the audience. Yeah. Write a joke, you know? And then you come on and you have this perfect joke and I'm dying laughing. Everyone is dying laughing because, you know, I've dated a lot. I have, like, you know, I don't want to say bitterness or resentment, but there were certain times, like, I was in grad school, you know, and I was dating this girl with a kid, and I'm teaching her kid karate. I'm taking her kid to the gym, but I'm doing grad school a lot, so I'm always like, hey, I'll see you, you know, 4 days from now, you know, 4 days from now. I got to do homework. I got to do this. I got to do that. She's, like, calling me every day, like, every 6 hours, like, but why aren't you hanging out, you know? And I was always like, because I'm in school, I'm doing this, I'm doing
right,
that.
Right.
But you're my, I don't have two girlfriends. You're my only girlfriend, you know? And so I was always just like, man, you know. So she always felt as though I was depriving her of all this attention and all this. But she, I don't think she knew that my attention was devoted towards her and her only, but also, you know, I have my own emotional traumas that you but in your brilliant joke writing you sort of stirred up that stuff for me of what I was trying to do, you know.
That's cool. I appreciate that, man. You know, you just never know who you're going to connect with in the audience. I've done sets where same jokes, the audience just looks at me like I'm weird. I did a set Saturday night over in Pennsylvania, and it's probably the best set I've done since I've been here. I had the whole place dying to the point where even the guys hosting said, you were probably the best comic we had going up tonight. So I was appreciative of that.
And then you did some of those jokes, the same jokes, bomb in other places that like shook your confidence?
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I wasting my time doing this? But I just like, I know I can do it. You know, I think the best thing for me, is just when people say you do good. That's really all I really like. I don't really need anything, but when an experienced comic such as yourself comes to me and says, you're good at this, don't give up, keep going at it. That's when I know I'm doing the right thing. Now, before I moved here, I even had one comic, rarely even talked to him. We did a showcase together. And he said to me, he's like, I know we don't really talk or anything, but I just want you to know you're good. You need to keep doing this when you get to New Jersey. Do not stop.
And I find you to be like a reserved person. Like, you're very reserved, but then when I see you on stage, this whole other, like, you just, your personality explodes, you know? Which I find interesting, where it's like, you're kind of, some people are just, they're just observing, waiting, like a cobra to strike. Bam. Oh, it's my turn to fucking talk. Watch this shit, you know?
I don't really know anybody here just yet. I'm still trying to fit in, make friends. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. As I get to know people more, I'll probably open up a little bit more. But, yeah, I am kind of reserved. I've been a big guy all my life, too. Been picked on a lot. That's another reason why I got into comedy, because it helps me cope with the shit that I've been through. So there's a natural thing for me to keep my guard up, no matter who I'm around, until I get to know them.
But I think, like, you know, New Jersey, what I like about it, I've been in a lot of other scenes. It's sort of, there's a level of meritocracy in terms of, like, I don't get along with everybody in the scene, but when I get off stage, like, people that, like, actively have been mean to me, later on go, good set. And I'm like, okay, you just told me everything I need to know.
Yeah, it's always helpful.
You know?
It's a respect thing.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this question, then we got to actually go in and perform, like,
yeah,
right,
man.
Now. Jersey versus Florida, cultural differences, go.
Florida is more laid back. People aren't as rush. They're like, okay, whenever, man. Here, I just feel like there's more of a stronger attitude towards, you know, get out of my way, no fucking move.
Keep a schedule.
Yeah, keep a schedule, you know. And that was like that before I left, so I was kind of expecting it when I got back. I was also expecting more of a harsher, like, you know, hey, fuck you type attitudes. There's not as many as I thought there would be. So it's as I was telling my brother, this was my home 31 years ago before I left, but it's not the same home I remember 31 years ago when I came back. So I'm still adapting.
But yeah, I totally felt that. I lived in New Orleans for 3 years, and I was like, you know, they were like, oh, this attitude is laissez-faire. And I'm like, is laissez-faire French for everyone here is beyond the pale of fucking lazy? Because then I agree with that. Because my Jersey programming is like, dude, when you say you're going to be here at this time, you are. And like, I would go to shows, and it would say like 8 p.m. on the poster. Mm-hmm. Dude, yeah, bro. I went to one show, and I'm not going to say the race of the people that were involved in New Orleans East, but I went to this one show in New Orleans East, and the host, so it said 8 p.m. on the poster. I waited around till a full 9:10. I go, the host isn't here. They're like, we can't start until the host is here. It's 9:10, 9:15. I got the email of, like, the DJ, right? I leave. I'm like, I'm out of here. I emailed the DJ. Did the host ever show up? He goes, yeah, he showed up at 10:15 asking for his money.
Oh, wow.
And they said everyone who was going to perform tonight left because you didn't. You were 2 hours and 15 minutes late. And he goes, where's my fucking money? Now, that's an extreme. That was the most extreme example. But, I mean, it was routine where, you know, the show says 8:30, the host shows up 9:15, 9:10, like it's, you know, when I show up, that's when the show happens. It's right. Like, but the poster, do you not read the poster? So, I mean, it's just so frustrating to me also because I was dating loose women who need a lot of attention. I was going to grad school, I had all this homework, and I would plan my day. Okay, I have 3 hours of homework here. Bah, now I'm going to do this show. Bah, now I'm going to make money. Bah, now I'm going to do this.
Right.
Now I got to do this homework. Plus, now I'm going to call my girlfriend. Like, honestly, because I'm Jersey and I just pack everything on my back, like a fucking pack mule, with a schedule as my advanced magical art form of performing my days properly.
Is that why you asked me to be on your podcast, or is it because I have a story to tell?
Well, I asked you to be on my podcast because I was broken up with 6 days ago by John Rowe telling me that some chick is making out with.
Burn to your soul to have your other ex-girlfriend on here.
No, I'm just trying to. I'm
going to also reveal that she cheated on you again. On.
Not surprising. You know, and I took you to my therapist. I tried to explain how crazy I am.
He was like, let's not break up. Love therapy. Let's go. Couples therapy. And he told us both we were crazy.
Duh.
But in similar ways, it was like, you're very fucking different, but there's a craziness element about both of you. You both think that other people are doing stupid shit, and you're on a serious mission in life, I think is what he said was our common bond. He's like, but everything else is fucked.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then, like, when I used this, my Jersey magic in New Orleans, my training, it was like, oh, no, you don't understand. Nothing like you know about anything to do with the world applies here.
In Florida, it was kind of the same way. Although the host usually showed up on time. The problem that we always ran into is the comics would show up, the host would show up, and there'd be, like, no audience. And the audience would show up 15, 20, 30 minutes later, and that's when the show would get going. There was one show I did go to. It was scheduled for 8 o'clock. It didn't get started till 10:30. And I actually had friends come out to see me perform and had to sit there and wait and wait and wait. I told them, you guys want to go home, go ahead. And they stuck it out for me, which was appreciative. I didn't get out of there until 12 o'clock at night. It was a two-hour drive home.
Oh, man. Yeah, and the drive's there. Yep. You know, even if I would go to Baton Rouge sometimes, I go to Lafayette sometimes. And, like, it's like, if this was going to start at 10:30, do you know how much that would affect literally the time I woke up?
Yep.
Like, you know what I mean? And it's one thing if the audience is there, but when the audience is there and the host isn't, it's like, that's so fucking rude to me. It's like, it's an aggressive act. To someone from New Jersey, the host showing up late is aggressive. That's like someone flicking you off or saying, you know, your mother's a fat cunt. Like, it's the equivalent because it's disrespectful of my day.
Yeah.
It's disrespectful of every ambition I've ever had.
I mean, it's really disrespectful to the venue putting you on. They're giving you room. They could easily kick you out and get abandoned.
Right. I mean, dollars per hour, minimum wage. Right. Everyone here at the venue's working, and you're not here, and you're just going to tell fart jokes, you know? I don't know. Anyway. But New Orleans, the food was so good that, you know, I gained almost 50 pounds in 3 years. And, you know, I loved, I lost, I lived. It did teach me a lot, and it got the Jersey stick. Like, let's say I have a tree branch in my ass from being from Jersey. You know what I mean? It pulled it out like an inch and a half, and I learned to almost enjoy myself, you know what I mean, a little bit more. So we're at the Brighton Bar.
Yeah, man.
Let's play a show.
All right, let's go.
All right.
I told you recently I got cheated on last week.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you guys probably weren't in a defined relationship.
No.
You were probably trying to, like, force some type of commitment, some type of title for your neuroticism.
My eroticism needs a title? That's my problem?
Neuroticism.
Neuroticism.
Needing to put a title on it. Needing
It's not ownership. It's a mutual, it's a relationship.
Right.
Both people commit that they're going to be with each other. That's not ownership. And if both people are active participants and not passive observers of the other's love moves, then it actually works out.
So you were committed with this girl?
Of course.
For how long?
I don't know. So, let's see. We met October 23rd.
You know exactly how many days
last
and how many
Wednesday
hours
I was, or last. Today's Monday. 6 days ago, Tuesday, I found out that she was making out with another dude at the bar.
How did you find out?
John Rowe, I'm waiting to perform at Carrollton Station. I signed a list. I'm hanging out with John. And he's like, oh, I need to tell you something. I saw your girlfriend last night. I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, she was at Lost Love. I was like, that's weird. I wasn't booked there. And he's like, yeah, well, she was making out with another dude. Cool. Then I text her, and she told me that was true. And then, what else?
She ignored you?
Then I blocked her from Facebook and her phone.
Oh,
and
I know how that goes. I couldn't email, I couldn't text, couldn't call, no Facebook message.
It always feels like a betrayal, though. It's like, I do this, and it's like, I just want someone to commit back. You know my friend Vidal Luazo? You know him? He told me, he's like, here's what you do, Eric, here's your problem. You have, like, this football, and you pass it off to a girl. And it's too heavy, because it's like, I cook, I'll do anything, I'll drive you to work, I'll do anything. And then it's like, and he's like, why don't you take little strips off that football, like pieces of beef jerky, and only reward good behavior. Don't throw the whole, it's heavy, your whole football. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a heavy football.
What do you remember, Kristen?
I remember you doing my dishes and telling me, why don't you fry me an egg? And I said, why don't you fry your own damn egg? And you expect immediate reciprocation. It's what therapists like to call quid pro quo, which our good friend Kelly Stone actually also let me know is a form of sexual abuse control. I do this, you do that in return. Immediate. And I used to say, wouldn't you rather me do something for you? Wouldn't you rather me suck your dick because I want to, not because I feel like I owe it to you? Or wouldn't you rather me, like, cook you up a couple of eggs because I'm in the mood to? And I had plans to get in a shower that morning. I was, like, running around, but you'd had your five-hour energy.
All hopped up. Fired up.
All hyped up. You're like,
too early for that.
You're like, dishes, to-do list, 13 things on it. I've already done 7 of them. And I'm like, it's fucking 8 in the morning.
Whoa. That's a huge accusation.
I know. No, it's true. And I'm like, I got to shower, you know, fry your own damn eggs. And you were like, it's over. That's it. I'm going to storm out of here like a toddler and get in my car, drive away, done with you. We did a lot of that. A lot of, I'm done with you. Oh, well, no, I'm done with you. Oh, yeah? I'm done with you.
We do act like babies.
I'm done. Yeah, and at the end, when we last stopped hanging out, which, look, I think it's been like 3 or 4 months, August, September, October, November, 4 months ago, we both said to each other, like, well, fuck you. Yeah, okay, well, fuck you too. I'm done. You can't be done because I'm done. Cool.
I've done it first.
Don't call me anymore. I'm blocking you. Well, I already blocked you. I'm hanging up. Well, it's done. And then we didn't talk for 4 months. I had to use a middleman to get a hold of you today to recommend that you be blessed with my presence again. Did the middleman tell you what my alternative was to telling him to say, hey, Kristen wants to see you before she leaves town?
You were gonna, I don't know, come by my house or cut my ears off?
Yeah, well, I know where you live, and I know you love 5-hour energy, and I thought you were still doing final exams. So I kind of felt bad to distract you and, like, make you come and sit in a hot tub and drink beer and smoke a joint with me in the middle of the day. But I was thinking the other alternative would be to just show up and be like, hey, hi, I'm leaving town. You've been, like, posting creepy things on my Facebook. Even though I can't even get a hold of you.
No, I just got here. You know what happened.
I got
broken up with in a shocking way. And then I'm loyal. I'm a one girl at a time kind of guy. So if I'm with a new girlfriend, I can't talk to you.
Oh, since she cheated on you, you're like, oh, okay.
Then I got my heart broken, and then I saw...
How long were you with this girl?
Don't worry about it. So
like 3 weeks?
Six.
6 weeks, okay. Isn't that low?
2 weeks of dating. I took her to Bacchanal. You know, I'm taking her out. I don't have any money. It's been like $100 on her. I was like, listen, lady... You know, you're my girlfriend, and I'm not super cool with you, like, kissing other dudes when I'm, like, you know what I mean? Is that the bargaining, the quid pro quo?
Well, I kissed other dudes. So, actually, here.
Right.
It's kind of... Not in this hot tub.
Right over there.
You sent me a text message. You said, I can't do this. I don't want to see you anymore because you couldn't take the games anymore. The games, my heart. You know,
it's a hard thing to unlock.
Your heart. Well, yeah. And I was upset, and I said, I just want to make out with somebody. And I was kind of whiny and kind of drunk. And so there was a gay guy here who was young and talkative and friendly. And I really thought that I was just kind of complaining and going to get sympathy. But instead, what I got was like, oh, honey, this guy sucks. Like, if you want to make out, I'll totally make out with you right now. And I was like, yeah, I kind of do want to make out. And they were like, yeah, fuck this guy. And so then I made out with this guy. And then
you kept getting drunk, and then you told me to pick up your kid from school.
No,
by the way, you made out with another dude.
I sobered up, and then I had to drive.
I didn't want to clean up your messes while at the same time you're kissing other people. It's like, look, if you want my endless loyalty, my ability to do favors constantly for someone that I'm in love with, that's, I can do that, but what I can't have is the infidelity as well. Because what I needed was like a home feeling, like I said. That's what I would get.
With me, Aaron Duvall, part two. Okay.
Part two.
Great set. I love you. You know, you're a sweet boy. You're very nice to me, which I'm very sensitive.
Okay.
And I like, you know, like your vibe. I'm like, I get this guy. I try to like, you know, crack him like an onion slowly. We were talking about this sort of like pivotal moment, right?
Okay.
So I'm big on psychology. I read like psychology books, actually. This is what I like to read in my, because I think I'm like fucked up. You know, what I mean? I have like.
I think
problems.
We all are. We're comics.
I have like mental problems, right? So like high school, you know, you started in Jersey.
Yeah.
You went to Florida high school. What was the difference there?
All right. So here in New Jersey, there's a set curriculum. At least there was at the time. I don't know how it is now, but there's a set curriculum that you do in each grade. In Florida, it's reverse. So whatever I did in my freshman year, you would do in a senior year in Florida. Whatever I did in my junior year, was it junior year, you would do in your sophomore year in Florida. So it's reverse. So I went from here to Florida, and because the curriculum was backwards for me, I had to take classes with sophomores and seniors.
They're like, you already did this shit.
I already did this shit, yeah.
So what that the freshmen are doing, so you got to reverse it,
yes.
Right?
And then the downside was the only class they could put me in was with all the popular jocks and the cheerleaders, and it was very awkward for me because here I am, a shy fat kid. I don't really talk to anybody. I got picked on a lot, and then they put me in with all these guys. Like, for example, they not only because the curriculum, but they also stuck me in a gym class where it was weightlifting and running the track with the same people. And I'm like, I'm not running this fucking track. I walked around the track once and went and laid down on the pad that they use for the pole vaulting. It was very awkward.
So they're like, you have a perfect body like us. Hey, you know, you want to do calculus right now? Like all this, every day, it's just like.
It was definitely weird. It was different.
But like, besides the curriculum,
uh-huh.
And did you notice any like cultural, everyone in Jersey versus everyone in Florida? Any cultural differences?
The thing with Florida is there's not a lot of people from Florida there. It's a lot of transplants from other states. Because they're trying to run away from something. Who knows what it is? And it's tourists. Child support payment. It's very touristy. So the people I hung out with and I met were just people from different states. I mean, my best friend, she was from Chicago. We hung out quite a bit. The thought is, laid back, no big rush. You do things, as it comes to you. Whereas here, it's like, okay, you have a time period. You do this at this time. You be here at this time. We're done at this time. We're going to the next thing. In Florida, like if I went and did a show, it was scheduled at 7:30. It may not start till 8:15 because they want to wait for people to show up because those people don't have any sense of, let's be there on time.
At this time.
At this time, right.
You're pregnant by 28, or you're a widower, and then your grandma shoots you at a mercy killing and puts you in it, kicks you into the gator bin.
Yeah.
Because why not? I mean, what else have you done? Your ovaries are shot.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a different culture down there. When I was in Orlando, I started in Daytona. Daytona, it's a lot of meth heads and people who are in DUIs. I think the only guy who has a license is a Uber driver and a cop. And when I moved out to Orlando, it was a little bit different.
So you were in the shadow growing up of Daytona.
Yeah.
The Daytona 500.
Yeah.
Right? So from, 15 to 20, whatever, you were in Daytona. What is it like for an economy to be based on one massive NASCAR event?
Here's the thing with Daytona. It's not just NASCAR. They have other events going on. They have Bike Week. If you're familiar with Sturgis, they have Bike Week. They have Spring Break. Or at the time, they had Spring Break. They have Bethune-Cookman Reunion. There's something going on pretty much most of the year. NASCAR is the big one, of course. It brings, I think they said, 500,000 people to the state. If you were to drive through Daytona during a race, it looks like one giant parking lot for like 10 miles. There's cars parked everywhere, any place they can find a place to put a car as a car. And then when that's over, it slows down. And then they go into the
so
next
like
event.
A seasonal economy.
Yeah, very seasonal.
So boom and bust, boom and bust.
Yeah.
What did that teach you about the economy in America in the future, right?
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought much about the economy. I'm not much of a political type person. I didn't really pay much attention to it. I just know that around February to to the end of March, it was like very busy with like three major events: Spring Break, Bike Week, and the NASCAR at the Daytona 500. And it was hell, especially because I worked in restaurants. There was one point I was working two jobs. I went from one job to the next, and it was just nonstop crazy. Some of the busiest restaurant work I've ever done was during the race week. Mm. I actually worked at Ruby Tuesdays directly across from the entrance. In a three-day period, they made the most money they ever made was $90,000, just 3 days of food. And it was... They had this big, huge tray. It's about 3 feet long and 2 feet wide. Just hamburger buns. Just put lettuce, tomato, and pickles on a bun. And as soon as I got that done, I'd hand it off and they'd give me another one to do because it was just going so fast. It's crazy. So.
Hey, that's just like, you know, bike week at Daytona. You know, I'm not in the Daytona 500, but I got this Harley. So yeah. I'm just as cool as those guys, right?
Yeah, and that would happen.
It's like whatever mind fuck you got to tell your girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, I'm just as cool as these Daytona 500 people. I could do that. I'm just a motorcycle is my modality of art.
Yeah. What happened is the race week would be over. There would be a week lull, and then it would go into bike week. And bike week was, it's a different, you know, of course, there's a different set of people, different types of people. I mean, they all have their good people and their bad people. Bike week was actually probably my favorite because even though I didn't have a motorcycle, I'd go up to the strip and walk around and check out the sights, and you get around drunk bikers and there's no telling who's doing what.
Yeah. They're like, I used to give heroin to, you know, Hillary Clinton's pussy every week. Like, I would inject it directly.
Okay, you know? So true story. A friend of mine, we went to bike week, check it out. There was a girl, she was so drunk, she was climbing all over this motorcycle, she's showing every bit of body part that she had, and she's like, just buy me another beer. That's all she kept saying, is just buy me another beer. Oh. And she was trashed. So 2 days later, my buddy comes up to me at work, he says, hey man, guess who I saw at, you know, some other bar. I said, who? He's like, the girl that was showing her pussy all over that guy's motorcycle. I said, did you say anything to her? He said, yeah, I walked up to her and said, hey, I saw you the other night at this club, you know, showing off your goods. And she's like, yeah, I was a little too drunk that night. But you just see all kinds of crazy stuff.
She's like, you know, I was trying to pick up one of those not Daytona driver, motorcycle Daytona driver.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like that was the mating call I was doing that night. What do you... Yeah, you're asking me too many questions.
Yeah, that was definitely her mating call that night. Buy me a beer. That was her mating call.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know how she
Shout
got
out
home.
To Kenneth Harris. There was this guy, this comic, if you can call him a comic, named Kenneth Harris in New Orleans. And every time I did comedy with him, he's like, buy me a beer, buy me a beer, buy me a beer. He would look at me in the eyes. He would like push me and go, buy me a beer, buy me a beer, buy me a beer. And I was like, do you know why I don't hang out in Union Station, New Orleans? Do you know why I don't hang out in Penn Station, Newark? Because I don't like homeless people asking me for shit constantly at a rate of like, give me this, give me this, give me this, right?
Yeah, we had one of those in Florida. He was constantly, if he wasn't asking for somebody to give him a drink, he had a drink somehow, and he was drinking hard stuff. He'd be so shit. Matter of fact, he, at one point, had a headline show at the Orlando Improv. He was so trash, he messed it up. They didn't want him ever to come back to do another headline set. That's how bad it was.
That one, it's like that football player is like, I was at the state championship. I threw the football, then I had a multiple concussion, and then, like, my life was over at that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, dude, you headline this club, you didn't think that, like, prepare some jokes or anything like that?
I think he had jokes prepared. He was just so trash he couldn't remember them. He was stumbling.
Was it like people sabotage themselves?
Some people do. They, you know, comics are inherently broken. That's why we do what we do. It's a way to cope. And I don't know what his brokenness was, but he was drinking a lot, and he would just start to say some off-the-wall stuff sometimes.
But it's like the thing that got him, like a club manager was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen thousands and thousands of comics. I'm going to headline you and give you X amount of dollars. And at that point, he destroys himself.
Yeah.
It's like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, he's a good comic. When he's sober, he has some really excellent material. But as he gets more drunk, he's slurring his words. He's stumbling on himself. He starts to say stuff that is incoherent or does not make sense.
And like that, like he prepared for the shows. It's like a boxer, too. It's like you prepare for the boxing matches that get you the title fight.
Right.
You prepare. Then you get this X amount of dollars to get the title fight. And then you're like, you shit the bed because it's like, oh, I get it. It's like cocaine and whores. It's like, no, suffering and hard work. And you're like, but money is cocaine and whores, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I go to the promised land now. Not really when you know what I mean? So being a professional boxer, being a professional comedian is a lot of discipline that people, it's very hard to.
Yeah, I mean, there's discipline in everything you do, especially being a comic. You know, if you want to be a good comic, you got to write your material. You got to put that time in. You got to go do the open mics. It's not going to come to you. Nobody's going to hand you a comedy spot. I mean, if they do, you're very lucky. There might be one in a million of people that can do that, but it's not common. Work for your shit. You got to.
Well, Aaron Tufall, I can tell you, is right at the place where he's hilarious. He's underrated. He's, you know, nobody knows about him, but I'm trying to pick him up at the Highway Diary podcast, you know? So I appreciate you doing this.
No, thank you. Appreciate you putting me on.
Thanks, bud.
All right, man.
All right. Take care.
This Take it easy, man.
Highway Diary. Is it? I think it's 264 with Aaron Duvall. Later, everybody.